We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter. This is the Dame More NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. It is Wednesday, December 22nd. I have Britt Robson of Min Post here. Before I bring Britt in, or welcome Britt in as he's staring at me through the screen, just quick announcement. I haven't talked yet on the pod about how I did test positive for COVID. I'm doing fine, but just from a pod standpoint, I'm going to take off some of these post-game pods until I'm feeling a little bit better. I can still do these afternoon recordings with Britt and that sort of thing. I think hopefully, you know, knock on wood, everything will be all right. And we'll be back to normal here in a week or so. Yeah, I'm still very capable of sitting at my desk and watching Timberwolves games. So, Britt Robson, you're here. What's up, man?
No, not much. I'm feeling fine, so I'm not too worried. I'm going to get tested sometime today or tomorrow, just because not even necessarily our proximity. We sit next to each other, but we also sit directly behind a ton of Timberwolves players, a few of them who have tested positive. Vando rode the bicycle the night before he was tested positive the next day. So,
and Patrick Beverley was eating that peanut butter sandwich right in front of us too at the last game. I mean, I personally don't like, I don't put any blame on it. I mean, it's your choice. It's my choice to be there, at the games. I don't know when I got it. I was traveling with the team last week.
Right. I was going to say it's probably trip, if anything, you know, because that was when the full weight of it hadn't really hit people yet. And so I think people were a little more casual. You and I were much less casual on Sunday night.
Right.
In fact, that was when I told you that I couldn't do Tuesday. So,
right. Oh, I should mention that too. Apology on my behalf. And I guess Britt's behalf, that we weren't able to do the Forgotten Star live event. I had a blast at that this summer when we did it, Britt.
And, yeah, it was fun.
We'll do it again at some point when the world allows it, maybe when it's a little bit warmer out or something. Just kind of crazy times right now, and we just put our heads down and we'll get through this, I think.
Yeah. Now, are you going to go on the 27th and 28th?
Not if I have any symptoms, obviously. Right. You know, probably
it's 10 days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you got to kind of figure that all out. I honestly don't feel that bad, but I do have, you know, some symptoms and stuff. So I'm not going to mess around with that at all.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, just be testing myself and that sort of thing. And, but yeah, they play at home the 27th and the 28th. Unless I've registered a bunch of negative tests, I won't be at those games, which is fine. Honestly, for me, the bigger bummer is not being able to see my family and stuff for Christmas.
And that's right. Yeah.
But It is what it is.
Right.
It all is.
Well, and also, I mean, not to, I mean, I'm sure we're just scintillating our listeners with this, but do you think we should move back from our seats?
Yeah. You mean we shouldn't sit right behind the players who are huffing and puffing on the bike? Yeah. We maybe should have reconsidered that. I mean, in all seriousness, though, like this whole thing, and as you were just getting to, like, I think everything changed in my mind over the past 10 days. I went on that road trip, yeah, it was 9 days ago, and it wasn't even on my mind as something personally putting me at risk or the play or anything, you know? It's
right,
it's,
right.
It really has exploded now, right? And so we'll react to it as such and, you know, just be smart, right? Like,
right.
You know, we don't want anybody to be getting sick, and yeah, we'll figure it out. But basketball.
Yes.
I guess since last we recorded or close to that, the Wolves were on a, starting with that Portland game two Sundays ago, the Wolves went 4-0. They beat Portland. They beat Denver. They beat the Lakers. They beat, who's the fourth one?
Why Dallas. Am I blanking out?
They beat Dallas. So that was four straight wins over that run of time. Karl Anthony Towns was playing incredible. The Wolves were fifth in offense, fifth in defense over that stretch. And we're really rolling going into a game in Dallas last night. And yes, they were shorthanded, but Dallas was objectively far more shorthanded than the Wolves were, which I think contributed to a pretty low feeling of that loss. It felt like it's about as bad of a loss as a road game can feel like. Are you with that?
No, I totally disagree.
Okay. Perfect.
And I'm shocked. I mean, all these people, Timberwolves Nation on Twitter was just, you know, clutching their pearls and wringing their hands. And John Krasinski said it was a terrible loss. And he's, you know, usually as reliable a barometer of sanity and, you know, pacific behavior as anybody I know. And all I can chalk it up to is people still don't understand what the identity of this team is. How the hell do they think this team has been winning ball games this season? It hasn't been because Anthony Edwards is filling it up, or that Kat and D'Lo are going to just run roughshod over the opposition. This team wins games by extending possessions on the offensive glass and by turning over the opposition. They did neither one of those things last night. And the reason they did neither one of those things was because Patrick Beverley, Vando, to some extent Josh Okogie, to some extent Edwards, who does have quite a few steals and deflections. He's not a great on-ball defender. He's a gambler, but he is disruptive in his own way. And all of those guys were missed. And they were missed mostly in terms of on-ball defense and extending possessions on the glass. And
still should have won, man. Still should have won. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns was rolling in that game. It needed to be more Karl Anthony Towns involvement. He can't be third in shots on the team. I think it's almost as simple as he took 14 shots in the game. I think if he takes 20 plus, they win that game.
Okay, and who usually gets him the ball?
But you know where I'm at on that, man.
Pat Beverley.
Okay, he needs to create more of his own shots in that situation. And I'm not ripping on Cat. Cat had an awesome week. This is what I'm talking about all the time with self-create more often, isolate more often, just shoot more threes from the top of the key. Not as many of the pump and goes.
How many games has Cat shooting won for this team, and how many games has the formula I just described won for this team?
You're not wrong. I'm not, obviously, right. That is the identity of this team. I totally agree with that.
And they did not have their identity. So I understand what you're saying. You're saying that it's a terrible opponent once you take away Hardaway, Kristaps, and Luka. Granted, they're three best players. But you can also say they're at home. They're in a little bit of a losing streak themselves. They had just gotten through losing a game 48 hours before to an opponent. And you also have to look at this Timberwolves team. This Timberwolves team gets beaten up. They are a small team. And when you take away Vando and Pat Bev, they are the most rugged defenders on this team. You take away those guys, and what happened? Jaden McDaniels got bullied last night a lot. Mm-hmm. And he is the best on-ball defender left on the roster. So what do you have in terms of on-ball defense? Nate Knight was a godsend during his little stint at the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, because he actually got into people. Naz Reid doesn't get into people. Cat doesn't get into people. D'Lo, for all his good defense this year, is not a get-into-a-person guy. They don't have the guys who take people out of plays. And Jalen Brunson is a guy who you need to be physical with in order to stop. He's a cat-and-mouse guy, but he's a physical guy on cat-and-mouse. And he had 28-9 or whatever it was, and he made it look easy.
I have frustration that you're right that that's the identity. I don't think a team should have one identity for being able to win a basketball game. And if you look at it, the Wolves 11 times this season have given up a single game defensive rating over 115 11 times. They're 0-11 in those games. So you're right. They lose when they don't defend well. It shouldn't be that black and white. It shouldn't be that black and white, man.
I know,
like, particularly when you have offensive talent. The Wolves did still have offensive talent in that game. And yes, D'Lo shot poorly. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm looking at 23 three-point attempts for Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell, and I'm looking at 4 for Cat.
No, and, I totally get that. Yep. And those are not bad points to make. And I agree with you that they got away from that after the first quarter. Cat did his thing in the first quarter, and it looked like they were going to be able to put this team away. Even though it was a seesaw battle, you just felt like the Wolves were the better team. But as things went along, first of all, Dorian Finney-Smith, I think, is incredibly underrated.
Totally. He shut down D'Lo.
And he knows how to get to the corners on shots. He's a good 3-and-D player. And he did do a good job on D'Lo. Chris Finch responded well, but a little tardy to putting McDaniels on Brunson. I think Leandro Balmero as the guy to handle Brunson.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's not a bad defender, but he is a zero. He's worse than anybody on the team on offense because he really doesn't shoot and can't shoot. And he also is not a particularly great team defender. He's good on-ball defender, but he doesn't have enough NBA experience. The typical, you know, the whole Gorgui Dieng comments about, yeah, they're X's and O's when they draw it up, but they're not staying X's and O's when they're on the court, is clearly what Balmero needs. He needs minutes to be a better team defender, but I think he needs minutes in Iowa. He does not need minutes here, except for the fact that, you know, again, we're COVIDed to the point where this team has been strip mined quite a bit here.
Yeah, well, COVID or not, can't play right now.
I don't think you can play Balmero much. And to be fair to Finch, he didn't play in the second half.
I mean, yeah, for sure.
He went Twin Towers, which is an interesting idea. And the abiding faith in Naz Reid, I get that there is, you know, some history for Naz being improved, and that he has some obvious skills, but right now he's a walking ambulance in terms of you know, what happens. This team, you know, bleeds when he's on the court, and I really think it was eye opening to me how Nate Knight made both Cat and Naz much better on defense, and it was because Nate Knight was challenging shots. And Cat challenges shots too, but the dude can't do everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so again, you know, I'm talking about defense again. And Nate Knight is a fouling machine because he.
I was going to say.
You know, he is somebody who, you know.
One of those guys who's never thinks he's created a foul with the body, right?
And I think he understands what his role is. What I really like about him is he's disciplined to the schemes. He knows what he's supposed to do, and he's diligent, but he overdoes it. And I tend to think that's a reflection of him knowing what his role is. He's the 11th to 14th guy on the team, however you want to structure that. Right. He's the guy who comes in when they send up a bat signal that they need some kind of Hail Mary to win this game, you know? And that's what Finch went to. And he actually was the reason, more than any other player, during that third quarter, fourth quarter run where the Wolves actually grabbed the lead for a quick minute. So, you know,
I want to go back to the Jaden McDaniels on Brunson thing. And you're right. Like, that was the only real option they had there, and they needed to. I mean, Brunson was going to be the guy who gets 20-25 for Dallas last night. Once Hardaway was out, like, it was going to be him. So they tried to have McDaniels out there as much as they could. But I thought it was interesting, and I kind of did agree with it, particularly once it became clear, okay, can't play Paul Morrow. So Finch went with Noel and Russell out there together, meaning one of them had to guard Brunson.
And Noel.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, like, let's see, Jalen. Like, we know you've got the offense. You've talked about, like, all the defense and stuff. And I've loved what we've seen from Jalen Noel this week in terms of what he's brought offensively. And it would have been so encouraging if he would have been able to, like, hold his own in that Bomaro matchup defensively. And that just, unfortunately, isn't quite there yet. Right. I don't know. He's not a very big guy. Maybe there's, like, I think, what did Finch say at the last press conference? Like, we just need him to be, like, average defensively.
Right. Yeah, Finch was just as blunt as you could possibly be. He's not on the court because of his defense. I think he literally said that. He said the problem is deep. What keeps him off the court is defense. He's fine. Right. Everybody knows he can be on offense. And you're right. When he matched up against Brunson, and to be fair, Brunson is somebody who he tortures second unit guys.
Yeah.
And the Wolves had a bunch of second unit guys. And to be fair to Finch, and I know I actually bend over backward to be fair to Finch because I respect him so much, but I do think he was the starting four last night. Now, another decision could have been made, but Vando was out and he went with the first three games of the season, you know, I mean, Okogie was out too. So You basically had the situation where unless you're going to play Nas or, you know, Knight, you know, because Prince is also out, that you had to go with 180-pound Jaden McDaniels as your power forward. And
right.
In retrospect, and maybe even at the time, if I thought, you know, more about it, I am of the conclusion, it's probably one of the things I'll write about when I write my column tomorrow, Jaden McDaniels is no longer a front court player in my estimation.
Facts.
He is a wing player. He is a wing stopper. And if that wing is too
large. It's funny that we even confuse that ever, right? You know, like, maybe he's power forward. Yeah, no, he's not.
He's not as good as Okogie in that role. Right, right.
No, it's fine. Right, exactly. Okogie weighs like 40 pounds more than he does.
I know. And that really does matter. I've never seen weight matter as much because even the mistakes Jalen is
Jaden.
What's his name? Jaden. Yeah, I get the J's on. I ought to just call him McDaniels. He understands that he's getting bullied. And as a result, he's not playing as the same way defensively he played last year, which was to trail guys and then use his length to block the shot. Now he knows that they are going to try to get into him. And as
they're going for the body. They're going for his body.
Exactly. And as a result, he's trying to strip people and be more disruptive before the shot. He used to be disruptive. He used to bide his time and wait for the shot to go up and then contest the shot because he's lithe and agile enough to follow the guy as long as the guy isn't trying to run him over. And right. So that's something that they found out about McDaniels, and he hasn't been able to solve it. And I think he hasn't been able to solve it because he's physically incapable of solving it. And that's a concern. That is something that will reduce his value if he doesn't, A, put on weight, and B, figure out an effective counter strategically to what they're doing. And until either one of those things happen, he needs to stay on large threes or about as high up on the weight size hierarchy as I want to go with him.
He should just guard point guards, the lead ball handler.
I mean, that's why you have Pat Bev, of course. But
I thought they did a really good job against Brunson in the first Dallas game where it was Pat Bev or McDaniels. Like, that's a hell of a
that's a hell of a
job for Brunson to have to, you know. Okay, because first you get Pat Bev.
Two very different guys. Right.
All right, let's take a quick break here and be back with Britt in 1 second here for segment two.
Today's episode is brought to you by 20 by 20 Solutions, a Minneapolis-based technology consulting company that works with your business to help you build and sustain success. A great front office puts together a winning team with a coach who can put together a winning strategy. When leadership does its job and it all comes together, that means success. Success in business isn't any different. Business leaders need to find the right mix of technology, strategy, and talent to make things really work. And that's never been truer for growing companies. 20 by 20's team has helped grow companies from thousands of customers to tens of millions by helping businesses across a wide range of industries, from consumer technology and healthcare to manufacturing and even human spaceflight. Reach out to Clark and Ben, who are Wolves fans and fans of this show, by emailing them at team@20by20solutions.com. That's T-E-A-M at 20x20solutions.com. And their team will review your needs and help you put together a plan before you need to make any commitments. 20 by 20 Solutions, technology, workflow, architecture, strategy. They're your sixth man on a winning team.
All right, we're back with Britt Robson of MinPost. Britt, the next thing I kind of want to talk about is, I think we can split this, what is it now, three games of COVID-ness to this team. And in the first games, you had the impact or lack thereof of not having Anthony Edwards, Torian Prince, and Josh Okogie. And now in this last game, you had the impact or lack thereof of Pat Bev and Jared Vanderbilt being out. I think I know where you're going to go with the answer to this question, but which one of the two do you think they missed more? If one is Ant and the other is Pat Bev and Vanderbilt.
Sure. Well, it's kind of unfair because if all the three guys came back as Vando and Pat Bev were out, it would be a better comparison.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is that the more guys you lose, the loss gets exponential. Mm-hmm. If you don't have Pat Bev and you don't have Ant to give you backcourt depth, you know, that's how you, you know, so that you have those situations. All that said, of course, I'm going to say the team hangs its hat on defense. Their defensive juggernauts are in, and it's almost hard to figure out who is more important to the defense at this point. I mean, Pat Bev is the tone setter, the culture guy who is riling everybody up. Vando is, as I said, the lungs and hamstrings, the engine, whatever you want to call it, the guy who makes the thing go. Pat Bev may be the driver, but he needs to have something to drive. And without Vando, the vehicle isn't nearly as effective.
Yeah. And I think that vehicle, a lot of it is D'Angelo Russell, right?
D'O having missing both Vando and Pat Bev really hurts D'Lo.
That's
what we saw last night.
Right. I tweeted it out before the game. I mean, and we kind of know this, the numbers when of the starting lineup, the normal starting lineup, but particularly the D'Lo, Vando, Pat Bev triumvirate when they're on the floor together. I mean, cleaning the glass, like, you can split it up for who's on the floor or not.
118th percentile, right?
No, they're literally 100th percentile.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, if they had a higher rating,
right,
it would be higher.
Like, so quote unquote, perfect offense when those three are on the floor and perfect defense when those three are on the floor numerically this season. And then
without much drop off when the other two guys are on the floor either.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, it really is a pretty astounding quintet, but you're right, we're talking trio here.
It is interesting though, again, and this is just numbers wise, and I'm not sure how accurate it all is. If you go for the minutes where D'Lo is on the floor and Pat Bev and Vando are off this year, where they take the hit is on offense. D'Lo is that group is
or the D'Lo minutes with Vando and Pat Bev off is 9th percentile in terms of offense and 91st in terms of defense.
But so, you know why? It's because that's the second unit.
Yeah.
That's no cap.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
Yeah, you're that, right.
You know, and that's, you know, Torian Prince and Naz Reid and, you know, choose your, you know, cold Malik Beasley, you know, in the first, you know, month of the season or whatever. D'Lo didn't have a lot to work with there. And let's face it, D'Lo's shot has been pretty much missing in action. I would say 80% of the season, and those 20%, most of them are cobbled together crunch times. He just hasn't. He's been hot occasionally in the first quarter and hot more regularly in crunch time. But from like when he goes out in the middle of the first quarter to the beginning of the fourth quarter, or the middle of the fourth quarter, those three quarters are not good shooting from D'Lo all season, it feels to me.
Do you think his shot's going to come around?
You have to think so, but the numbers are not great in terms of it. He's not a sharpshooter. He looks like more of a sharpshooter because he, I don't think open or contested makes a lot of difference to him.
Yeah, he did last night.
Yeah, but even he missed some open Jays too. I mean, it's, I think it's right. How he feels, you know, if he's in a groove and, you know, and again, because he's so, his wingspan is so enormous, size does matter. He can be being guarded by a guy who's also 6'3 or 6'4, but he still is the bigger player. But when a guy, Finney Smith is listed, I think, at 6'7, and I think he's taller than that, but yeah. He is standing next to Cat. On a Sunday night, he looked like maybe an inch or two shorter than Cat. So I do think size bothers D'Lo because he can't get off his cat and mouse contested jumper as easily.
I think when we talk about like some of the Wolves bugaboos this year, right? The being able to figure out how to go through the whole cat getting doubled in the post thing, the roaming second big, like that's obviously on the big board of Wolves problems this year. There's also their ability to defend against that spread pick and roll has been a problem, obviously, in that Atlanta game, the Utah game, some other games along the way. Then there's also just like the physicality. And I was thinking last night, if I was going to add to it, given just how important D'Lo is to the offense, because he is so high usage, I think another matchup issue is becoming like, or something that opponents will target is guarding him with a really big player, right? Mm-hmm. I think that like a Dorian Finney-Smith type right. guy, I would, again, if I was an opponent, I would target that. Like, I don't know, off the top of my head, like Utah tomorrow, like I'm putting Royce O'Neal on him, right?
Okay. And I grant you all of that, but that's why it was hard for me. I mean, not that hard because I immediately went to Vando and Pat Bev as the bigger losses. But if Ant's on the floor, Finney Smith is on Ant.
Yeah. But that's kind of what I'm talking about is maybe don't do that. Like,
if you let Ant get guarded by a small, you know, let's say Brunson or let's say, I don't know, Tim Hardaway.
Or Conley. Or whatever. Let's talk about the Utah game.
Like, oh, Utah. Okay. Mike Conley on Ant. I would look forward to that matchup if I were the Timberwolves. I mean, yeah. Ant would abuse Mike Conley.
And I think D'Lo would be able to get to his shot and stuff more against Conley as well. So, but I know I'm going to kind of stick to my guns here. Like, I think that's what I would do if I was Utah. And I would have the roaming Gobert at the rim. And then, okay, yeah, Ant's going to get by Conley. But you still have Gobert at the back line at the rim. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's one game, but I think we have kind of seen this over the course of the year. If D'Lo doesn't have his space to kind of operate in the mid-range for that pull-up or even from the three-point line for that pull-up, I think that does hurt his offense even more. His best offensive games have been in the games where he can get to his space and pull up over the defender. And that's a lot harder to do against a Dorian Finney-Smith. That's a lot harder to do against
I would agree with that. I think what I would argue back, and it's not a bad case you're making. I think you're making a good argument on a losing argument, which is that Ant, properly described by Chris Finch as the home run hitter, he's the guy that gets you 15 points in, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
D'Lo can do that, but not as you don't expect it. I mean, put it this way. If Ann hits the team's 6 points, whether it's two threes, a 3-point play and a three or three buckets, mid-range and two layups, however you want to say it, if Anthony Edwards gets his team's 6 points in a row, I guarantee you the opposing coach is calling timeout.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means a tsunami is on the horizon. And right. So if you want to court that tsunami by playing Conley on him instead of O'Neal, you may basically forfeit a 10-point swing pretty quickly.
Okay, so how about this? The best lineup you can put out defensively against the Wolves, in my opinion, is to have the power forward guarding Cat.
Agreed.
With the center roaming.
Agreed.
For the double, plus two big wings out there, one to put on Ant, one to put on D'Lo, and then have your smaller guard on Patrick Beverley. Now, not every team has that personnel to be able to do it, but I think if you go through and you look at starting lineups of the Wolves' different opponents, if I'm just saying I'm going to note that now when I'm looking at the matchups going forward and say, oh, they have a Royce O'Neal and Bogdanovich, and I guess Bogdanovich would be on Cat, but a team that can guard Ant and D'Lo with some size, I think that will be cumbersome for the Wolves' offense a little bit going forward. Not unsolvable. Like, you can get to it. You just probably got to run a little bit more pick and roll, set some more screens, find yourself some better
and cutting.
Better matches.
I really do think that the way I see that working out is that usage goes up for Cat, both in terms of dime cutting, making those passes, mostly with Vando, but I think Pat Bev is also pretty good at it. And then also shooting. Cat just basically takes a few more contested looks. Jim Pete made a really perceptive comment last night when Cat committed his one really egregious turnover. He has gotten better about that, but when he was doubled and he just flung the ball into like the eighth row, and Jim Pete said, just lock and load on that. And he's right. If a guy 6'11 or 6'10 or whatever you want to, call Cat's height, shooting over a double team. And I know he isn't a jump shooter. He's a set shooter, but I still like the odds of that better than the stray voltage that we get otherwise when Cat has gotten frustrated with, the way things are going. So
I think one of the things what Jim Pete was getting to, I was talking to him about this before one of the games, and he was talking about when he was in Golden State and he played with Mitch Richmond.
Uh-huh.
They would go to, Richmond was a load for a guard, but they're
trying
to
post. Hand-like, actually.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. He was like, we would try and Don Nelson would try and run this action to get a lot of Mitch Richmond post-ups. And he's guarded by a guard a lot of the time. So they would try and front that or double that. And what they would get to, and Jim would be making the pass, is a little bit more of a high-low league, is he would lock and drop. So you have the front there and you immediately recognize the player fronting you in the post there. And you immediately turn into functionally like the backdoor version of a post-up. You're excited by the fact that they're trying to take that away. And that's just a lob over the top. And it is what we see Cat do in those situations more often when he is being denied the ball in the post. Cat will respond by going further out to the perimeter to get the catch. He'll go, He said, you're fronting me. Okay, well, I'm just going to go out to 19 feet and get in front of you and get the ball there. When I think, yeah, the move probably is just to spin baseline, you know, for the lob, particularly if Cat's being guarded by a small like that, you know, that pass should be there. And I think this year is all an adjustment for Cat in being guarded in this manner. He just does need to add a couple more adjustments like that, or counters maybe is the right word, to the way in which he's been guarded. And I feel kind of bad with us somewhat bagging on Cat, because it's not like the past five games have been bad Cat games.
Right.
He's the best player. They need a little bit more. They need more shots from Cat overall, and they need more shots and more touches for him in good places. And I think he can do a little bit himself to find those things.
And thank you for clarifying that. I totally misunderstood that comment. I tried to figure out what the second word he said after lock was. I even ran it back, and I it didn't sound like load, but lock and drop didn't make any sense to me. So I didn't even consider that as an option. And having this explanation really does help, because you're right. He was referring to Cat getting his own offense, so I thought he meant lock and shoot, you know?
Right. Well, that's not a bad idea either.
No, but I also like the idea of the spin off. I think, to be honest with you, Cat is a little bit self-conscious over his lack of lift. And I think that if you notice, Cat is not a frequent lob target.
Totally.
He does not enjoy seeing how high he can get above the rim, because I don't think it's that high, you know? And so I think he doesn't want that secret to be, you know, out there.
I think he's a 1 foot jumper, right? Yeah. Like when he gets on a fast break and he goes up and he does this little like cock it back sort of thing. Like
that's
he gets up there.
That's his biggest thing.
Well, then he can get up on that, but he's got a running start and he's jumping off of one leg.
A running start. He can't get up on that if he's inside the foul line.
Right. Because he's got to, if you do the lock and drop thing, you got to go off of two. And so I bet you he can jump a lot higher off of 1 foot than he can off of 2 feet. And some players are just like that, you know?
Well, and that may be one of the reasons he's such a great shooter, is that, you know, he's perfected a way of playing that fits his particular skill sets, and skills are honed by favoring what you can do and not what you can't do. And so, I agree with you. I think that, Cat is playing, not only is he playing his best basketball in quite a while, I don't know if it's the best of his career, it might be, but his balance of what he does on the court, how he acts on the sideline and in the locker room, and his take on just on life in general is less cringeworthy and in many cases just flat out mature in ways that really I have been encouraged by what I see as really tangible growth in both Cat and D'Lo this year. I think they are better players. They certainly are better than they were last year. That goes without saying. But I'm talking about long-term as pieces to build on.
Right.
I think both are more I'll tell you the truth. If Cat and D'Lo are your two best players on the team, you're never going to win a ring. I mean, I'm not overrating these guys, but I am saying that they're sturdier pieces. They are pieces that if you put a burden on them to be a competitive team, they are two of the foundational pieces that are less likely to crumble than I thought they might be at the beginning of this season.
Well, I think too, what we're learning, what we're getting at with the Cat thing is it's like, there's a ton of great things that Cat can do. It's, can you do a couple more of those things great? Can you get a touch before the double comes and immediately go at it and get to your right hook right there before the second player comes? Can you square up and immediately take that jumper in their face and make that half the time? And then when they react faster, can you lock and drop? Can you get that Can you get that catch at the rim? Like,
and he's two for three thus far because he has done the first two things you mentioned. He just hasn't done the third.
Right. And so, you know, can he do all those? And D'Lo, like, can he add a couple more things? Obviously, he's bringing a lot more defensively this year. Can we see his pick and roll volume and effectiveness go up in the second half of the season? Can we see him, you know, get to his shot more consistently? There's like, it hasn't been bad at all with Cat and D'Lo this year, even despite some of the numbers, Cat's and post-up situations and D'Lo and just overall shooting. There is this vision out there of what they could look like in the second half of the season that I don't think really is a mirage in any way, where you go, okay, that's a pretty dynamic 1-2, not to mention, you know, Ant fluttering in there at 2 or 3 or 1 sometimes as well.
Exactly. Like, if they're healthy.
Right.
By all means. And it is an issue, I think, that if without Pat Bev, D'Lo off the ball with Jordan McLaughlin is not a good idea. Even Noel, not that good of an idea. You do need a special kind of player to know when to feature D'Lo off the ball and when to use D'Lo's magnetizing off the ball to start to cook with Cat someplace or cook with Ant someplace. I mean, yet again, I mean, the ways in which Patrick Beverley is underrated, he may be overrated for the defensive culture and everything, although I think he deserves almost all the credit. Everybody has absorbed that, and they know how much of a difference he's made. But the decisions he makes on offense, he's not a wunderkind. He's not a great skill guy on offense. But he almost always makes the right decision in terms of when to shoot, when to put the ball on the deck, when to pass quickly, when to set a back screen. I mean, all the time, if you just watch him in a team's half-court offense, he and D'Lo, their half-court offense IQ is off the charts and is one of the best things about this pretty bad half-court offense that this team has right now. So what they need is for Ant to be more efficient, for Beasley to be more efficient, for McDaniels to be more efficient, for Vando to be anything, you know. there are a lot of guys right now that are not giving you what you need on offense. And I don't think – some of it, of course, is D'Lo's inaccuracy. But D'Lo and Pat Bev, it was kind of funny to hear Finch the other night say, I always thought they were going to be the starting backcourt, you know. Right. I mean, it's like...
it took a little while.
Well, I mean, part of it, Pat Bev did miss the first game, and he loves McDaniels. And, you know, and so... he wanted to give McDaniels as much chance as he could. And that's a pretty small team. If you have those two little guards and McDaniels at the four or Okogie, I mean, Vando solves a lot of problems and his absence created a lot of problems last night.
Britt, I put out a call for some Q&A questions. So let's take one more break, and then I'll rip through a few of these questions that people gave us, and we'll answer those after a break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back with Britt Robson of MinPost for our final segment here. I put out a call on Twitter for some questions for Britt and I here to get at. So we'll rip through some of these in the last 15, 20 minutes here. One question that I'm just seeing pop up right now is from Mark at Mastidler. After Cat, whose extended absence would hurt the Wolves most? Put another way, who is the MVP after Cat? We have Britt got to see for the first time in 2 years what this team looks like without Anthony Edwards. I think that's shown us some there. We've seen D'Lo miss time. The Wolves are 0-5 in those games. What would be your answer to that question?
Well, understand that it's a roster question as much as it is a individual talent question. So I would say D'Lo. I think that Pat Bev would wear out quickly if he was having to do the offensive load that D'Lo has. I don't think they have a lot in the backcourt in terms of ball handlers and play creators. And I do think that D'Lo is an organizer on defense. He just needs people to organize. I mean,
what an encouraging development. I agree with this too, that, I mean, but we would have said
not at all.
That Ant was the answer to this before. Yeah. And you could even and this isn't even a takeaway from Ant, but I mean, you can make a case for Patrick Beverley for this question. You can even make a case for Jared Vanderbilt for this question right now.
Exactly.
Given the roster and how the identity, as you were getting at, changes. But yeah, I do think the answer is D'Lo.
And I am going to say something that
is this going to be like when you took, we're going to take McDaniels over?
Yeah, exactly. It's the first thing I thought of. Ant right now is the fifth most valuable player in that starting lineup.
I don't know, man. To the identity, yes, but he's the talent, I think.
Did you miss the Wolves' three-point shooting on Sunday night? I thought it was what a joy it was to see this team take only, like, I can't remember what it was, but it wasn't 30, I don't think. And they made over 40% of them. Right. How in the world did that happen? Well, perhaps because the guy who usually chucks 9 of them a game and makes a third of them wasn't in the lineup, you know? Right. And obviously D'Lo is the same way. But you can't have two guys like that. And Anthony Edwards remains, if you were in a fantasy league and you had a legacy league, right, Anthony Edwards is the guy you'd keep more than anybody on the roster.
Yeah, I think dynasty is the term you're looking for.
Yeah, there it goes. There it goes. Yeah, there you go. Legacy, dynasty, right. One of those Y words. But you're right. I mean, he is the keystone of the Wolves' future.
Right.
All that said, his second season has not been a leap. It has been a step. It has been sometimes looking more like a one step forward, one step back. But I think it's more for every three steps, there are two steps back.
Right.
I do think he's making progress, and certainly in other aspects of his game, other than scoring and shooting, he's making progress.
If he would have taken a leap this season, the answer to this question is obviously the second most valuable player on the team is Anthony Edwards.
Right. Right.
Right. I mean, it's kind of that simple.
Right. Right. But I do want to say that I do think his on ball and to some extent his off ball defense has improved. And I do think his rebounding is more conscious. I do think his shot selection, quite frankly, is worse.
I think it's worse because it's the same.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you're probably right. It probably is it's annoying because he hasn't figured it out and therefore feels worse. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the point is that his potential value versus his real value is gapped wider than I would have expected from him this season. Sure. And, you know, on the other hand, we're not even, you know, we're just barely over the one-third mark, haven't hit the half-season mark yet, and that's kind of where he took off last season.
Right.
And it may be funny to look back on this and say, oh, remember when we thought that, you know, he wasn't doing things.
But, I mean, that probably will happen. He's 20, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But I think it is also true, or at least fair to say that D'Lo has been the second most valuable player or who's the impact they feel most when he's missing. Along those lines, another question from Matthew Williams on Twitter said, would you give D'Lo an extension? And if so, for how much? Obviously, we know D'Angelo Russell, he does have this season and next season left on the books, but he is extension eligible at the end of the season. I think, you know, to be fair, coming into the year, you know, my thinking was when D'Lo brought up the idea that it was a contract year, that seemed a little bold. You know, he's already on a max contract. Kind of thought that would just play out, and you know, and then you kind of reassess when you get to that point when he becomes an unrestricted free agent. He has played well. And to that end, I think it opens up the idea that, as we're talking about, if he is the second most valuable player in this team right now, that when this offseason comes around, that a extension makes more sense. As somebody in yourself that's been very high on D'Lo, particularly defensively this year, has your mind changed on where, how you feel about him extension-wise?
No. I think that paying him over $30 million for the next two seasons and figuring out what happens after that is by far the most logical thing to do. It isn't like the guy, I don't think he's necessarily being overpaid now, which certainly was the case, I think last season. But I don't think, it kind of reminds me of like whenever the Gophers have a coach that has a winning season. Oh, okay. You know, time to give, time to boost that salary and extend the time on it because, you know, we're afraid we're going to lose this guy. Let me tell you, if D'Lo was a coveted figure on the free agent market, then they would have Ben Simmons right now, probably. Because I think the Wolves were willing, maybe not Rosas, but maybe even Rosas, if push came to shove, would have taken Ben Simmons in a D'Lo deal. And I have been complimentary about him, and that hasn't changed. I think that D'Lo, I got almost nothing but good things to say about him in terms of
what if he said, and let's just fast forward into like the season's over and whatever, we just kind of duplicate this. The Wolves are finished the year 39-43 or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which is what they're tracking for. D'Lo does this for the rest of the season. Would you, as Sachin Gupta, offer him a 4-year, $80 million contract?
You mean 20 a year?
20 a year, yeah.
I think he'd regard that as insulting, wouldn't he?
I do too, but I'm just trying to
insult him. I mean, I think the deal is clearly,
what if he said he would? What if he would take that though? Would you do that?
Ooh, that's not an answer I want to make quickly. Yeah. I think that's an interesting idea. I think D'Lo would outright reject it. So I think it's a moot point. But if I were able to get D'Angelo Russell for 4 years at $20 million a year and lock that in, my first take on that is, yes, I'd do it. Because D'Lo can kick over to shooting guard if you wind up deciding you need a better point guard. And Ant can always kick up, therefore, to small forward, and you have a dynamic team. That's assuming that you can get a bruising center or power forward to beef up your size. But I don't think that that essentially cuts D'Lo's salary by a third and locks him in longer during what will be the supposed prime of his career. Yeah, I'd probably do that.
I think it's an interesting question of, like, now you're really, you know, you're more committed long term to this core of this team. And you're probably right. The number needs to be higher. Maybe we call it 4-100, 4-110 or something like that. But I think one of those numbers is a value, right? And you sign him to it. If it's just like on paper, okay, he's worth this. But you go, okay, if we sign D'Lo to a 4-year 100 contract or whatever it may be, now you have him for 5 more years, right? And you have Ant signed up for that too. I mean, he'll get his extension in time.
Right.
It's a bit interesting. It feels a bit premature, not that D'Lo isn't worth it necessarily, but there's something that would give me anxiety about signing D'Lo long term before you have Cat locked up long term, I guess, regardless of what the number is, you know?
But at that price, I think that
sure. Maybe I went too low on it.
I think he's movable.
Right. That's true.
You know?
That's true.
And so, but in answer to the guy's question, I would not sign him to an extension. I think that both sides should be comfortable, and I wouldn't have said this on the Wolves side until these last 30 games. I think both sides should be comfortable with giving D'Lo $30 million a year. He is important on both sides of the ball. He's having what I view as probably a career year, even though his shooting is terrible. I do think his shooting will get better. I don't think it will be he's not a 55, 56% true shooting percentage guy. I think he's usually more going to be low 50s. But I think he organizes the team well. I think he can do things that are really important. And I think there is value, as much as I'm not a hero ball kind of guy, I think there is value on a team that does have Cat and Ant to have a guy who, you know, if you want a bucket, he is willing to be the guy to try to get you that bucket and has had some success doing that. That's all that's worth money, but not more than $30 million a year. And why you're in the catbird seat paying D'Lo for the next two seasons, why his happiness is not worth overextending yourself into the future that much, because it's a two-way street. You know, he got overpaid for a while. If he turns out being underpaid the next year, you know, a year and a half from now, that's the way contracts are supposed to work, you know.
Another direction here, Kyle Aho asks, and you would be better at answering this question than I would, simply put, is this the best coaching staff the Wolves have ever had?
That's really hard because you don't know the breakdown of how Pablo Prigioni, is he a figurehead or is he important? You know, I really get the impression that Chris Finch, he doesn't have quite a Tibbs level control over this team, but it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. I think that he's a dominant figure in the room. And then I think you go Micah Norrie. And then after that, I think there's a big drop off. That's just my own. That's my personal sense of things. That said, Finch, I love him. I think he's a great coach. Micah Norrie may just, you know, he may just charm me with, he's a silver tongued devil, you know. I mean, he's the kind of guy you listen to. I could listen to him talk all day. I mean, you know, he's so much fun. He blends in a knowledge with the game with a, you know, an idea, but he tries for analogies that the unsuccessful analogies are almost as much fun as the successful analogies.
Right, he's up your alley.
He's a good dude. He's a good dude to have around, you know. And I also think he's a smart coach. So I would say that the coaching staff that had Flip, Jerry Seasting, I thought was a very good assistant for the Wolves. Mm-hmm. And I think that Alleman and his son, you know, Alleman's son, actually, even David, back then, if he cleans up some of his, well, I mean, you know, I don't want to even get into that. I think that he will essentially become a head coach someday. And
I think he's Michael Malone's number two in command right now, right?
Okay. Well, there you go. So I would say that the Adelman era, and I would say that maybe one of the years that Flip had Seasting, I would say that those are the periods that I think have been the three best coaching eras.
So a similar question here from Fat Greg Oden is the list of NBA coaches you'd rather have than Chris Finch longer than five current NBA coaches?
Well, I will tell you right now that I am a huge believer in continuity right now.
Right.
One of the things that I'm a column, I don't know when I'm going to write it. I've been thinking about writing it in February. I may write it sooner. Is let's not mess around. Let's not monkey. Let's not make the perfect the enemy of the good. And I want to see what happens on status quo. I want to see what happens when you keep this roster together with this coaching staff and just give them time to marinate and to have this culture permeate a little bit more. And
right, and front office too.
And
right?
Exactly, I think that's tied exactly. To it. Yeah. Yep, it's definitely tied to that. And so let's just get comfortable with that. Is Eric Spoelstra a better coach than Chris Finch? I think he is, yes. Are there four or five other guys that probably are? Yeah. Do I want to see anything get messed with right now in terms of replacing Chris Finch or making some significant changes in the way this organization operates right now? No, I do not. So, you know, kind of a weird answer. I would say I'd rather have Finch right now than any other coach because I don't want to mess with what I acknowledge is a, you know, at best 500 situation. But mm-hmm. I feel like this is like a team that has been stuck in a deep trough trying to rock the car out by putting on the gas and hitting the accelerator and rocking this thing out. And it's like they're just now escaping this muddy pothole or this snow, whatever you want to call it. And people are saying, all right, let's, you know, put a turbocharged V8 in this baby. You know, let's turn on the afterburners and, you know, whatever.
Right.
Let's see what happens now that we're finally escaping a bad place psychologically, physically, skill-wise. Let's see what happens. Let's get rolling a little bit, and then we'll figure it out.
Right. I remember asking myself and some people when I was at Summer League about Chris Finch or just thinking about Chris Finch. And I was asking, you know, if Chris Finch is Nick Nurse 2.0, right? Uh-huh. If he is that, which, you know, that's very high praise, but certainly similarities there. I just wonder, like, what is the impact of that, you know? And I think I was thinking about it a little bit too, like black and white, like, oh, how many extra wins is that, you know? And I think
to your point on continuity and on culture and on those sort of things, we are, and I'm not saying Chris Finch necessarily is Nick Nurse now, but I think 30 games into the season, we can say it. That's more true than it was a few months ago. And I do think the impact of that is proving to be pretty profound from a culture standpoint. I think above all else, I think there's been some things he's tripped up on in terms of rotation. We're talking about the starting lineup. You know, it's just a tricky roster to even be able to to figure out and to coach perfectly. But I don't know. You've been at the game sitting where we sit for a lot longer than I have, but I just see a group of players who listen and get along with and are engaged by this coach a lot more than I have seen when it was Tom Thibodeau or Ryan Saunders on the sidelines. And I don't know exactly what the value of that is, but I tend to believe it's probably pretty large. And it's pretty important in terms of setting a culture for Anthony Edwards. It's pretty important in terms of convincing Karl Anthony Towns to sign again here to make a D'Lo extension make sense. And I think even if it is just a 500-year, 38-win year, this and that, that will be a real positive externality of Chris Finch if that proves to be true.
Yes. And I do think that what I also like about him is that he, like last night, there were all kinds of reasons for the Wolves not to have won last night. And I know we opened this podcast with me saying it was totally understandable how they lost last night because they didn't have their identity guys on the court. But Finch's job is not to concede unless he feels like strategically that's the thing to do. And he is not that way. He's not that kind of guy. He is mm-hmm. he is like the heady, good but never going to be great point guard who leads the team by what he says in the locker room and what he shows on the court, right. getting you know the ball to the best players and stuff and playing hard-nosed D. He's one of those guys that is a combination of being a tone setter and a glue guy, only he's on the bench, you know?
Right.
It's why he and Pat Bev, I think, really have a great mutual admiration society. And so I do think, like last night, he wasn't happy. He hated the shot selection, and that was obviously a rip on D'Lo, in my opinion, and Malik Beasley, by the way. You know, who everybody praised as having a great game because the shots went in. But, you know, I'm over right. Malik Beasley right now, to be honest with you. But that's a whole other conversation. Anyway.
Well, there is we'll do this for the last question from Karl Towns, number one fan. What is Malik Beasley's role? Should the team explore trading him? That'll be our last question. What's his role? Should the Wolves explore trading Malik Beasley?
His role is very simple, which is to get a bucket off the bench on a second unit that really needs him to be a 40% shooter from deep on a lot of volume, and to give D'Lo room to explore getting the other three guys who are desperately in need of playmaking touches in the right spots. And I think the Wolves' second unit offense has been let down by Malik Beasley. I think that his quickness on the draw of above the break threes rather than going to the corner more often, which in fairness, he has begun to do a little bit more. His role on the team is the designated scorer in the second unit and a guy who, when he is hot, understands both his role as a scorer and his role as a decoy. And
right.
also, I mean, his role.
Brett, he's shooting 72% of his shots from three this season.
Yeah.
And last season, he shot 52% of his shots from three.
Yeah.
It's too much, man.
It is too much, but I bet you, I don't know if you have this up, I bet his corner threes are not up. I think they're all above the break.
No. Oh, wait. Nope. Well, 25% of his shots have been corner threes this year, and 15% of them were corner threes last year. Now, granted, it's overall his threes are up, you know. So I guess it's...
So what about his above the break then?
Above the break have been 47% of his total shots this year, and last year it was 37% of his total shots. I mean, he's just shooting more threes overall.
Right. But you're right. It's funny that it feels to me like...
It's increased by 10% from the corner and 10% from above the break.
Yeah, decreased,
and that's what's got it from 52 to 72.
Yeah. But because the shot mix in the corners was always a lesser percentage, that 10% is a bigger chunk missing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me like the injurious shots are of the above the break threes. If Beasley misses from the corner, I usually don't think it's a bad shot.
He is a good shooter.
He's a really good 3-point shooter from the corners, especially.
And I was showing this to you at the last game we were at. I was just looking up the highest volume 3-point shooters per minute in the league.
Right.
Like if you look it up, Malik isn't going to be one of the highest overall volume 3-point shooters because he plays fewer minutes than guys who start.
Right.
But it really struck me that his volume per minute of threes is the same as Duncan Robinson this year, and they're shooting the same percentage.
Right.
As well.
That was kind of amazing.
And I don't know, like, I don't really mean this to make excuses for Beasley, because I think part of the reason why he struggled is he didn't come into camp in the same level of shape that he has in the past. But it is just always important to acknowledge with 3-point shooting that it is volatile, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yep.
And a great shooter. And I would say Malik Beasley is a pretty great shooter, but a for sure great shooter like Duncan Robinson is just as volatile as well, where your 3-point percentage can drop by 10% year over year. It happens, or at least in this chunk. I think it would suggest, those numbers would suggest, that I think if Malik Beasley uses a little bit more discernment on what threes he takes and some natural progression back to his mean, we are going to have a better offensive option, a better 3-point shooter from Malik Beasley in the second half of the year, if he stays on the team. And to that end, like, I mean, I just remember talking to people around the deadline last year, and there wasn't a heavy demand for Malik Beasley at $16 million a year. And that's when he was shooting 40% on 9 threes a game. He's not in as good of shape this year. He's shooting worse.
And you haven't even talked about, go to his page, his NBA career page, and look at the defensive ratings. I mean, they will burn your eyes. I mean, you know, he was the worst 2 years running. He had the worst defensive rating on the team. I don't know what it is this year, but I guarantee, I shouldn't guarantee you. I would guess that among the 10 top rotation guys, he is second, third, or fourth worst, if not the worst, in terms of defensive rating.
On the Wolves, you're saying?
Yeah.
Or across the league?
This year.
Yeah, it would take me a second to pull that up. But yeah, I think that's been a disappointment from me too.
He's a bad defender. He's the bad defender, and part of that is he's not large. I mean, he really is a whippet kind of guy. And I got it here,
Britt. The worst defensive rating is McKinley Wright in his 4 minutes he's played.
I'm talking top 10.
I know.
Okay.
So these are the four worst defensive ratings on the team. McKinley Wright, that one doesn't count. Jordan McLaughlin, Torian Prince, and then Malik Beasley. So of the consistent role or the players consistently in the rotation, Malik Beasley does have the worst defensive rating on the team, worse than Naz Reid, worse than Jalen Noel, who are the next worst of the rotation players this season. And yeah, I was optimistic that it was going to trend in a better direction for him this year, and it certainly has not. And I don't think you can exclusively blame the fact that he's in the second unit or anything like that. I mean, maybe that's a small factor, he just hasn't really improved a lot as a defender.
One thing I will say about Malik Beasley, because I think I've ripped him pretty solidly here, and I liked him, you know, as the team's designated scorer at different points in the last, you know, since he's come over from Denver. His role is not nearly as important as it was in any of his other times on the Wolves.
Right.
His minutes are dictated by how well other players are playing rather than how well he's playing. Hmm. And he is an extremely proud and loud individual. The fact that he has kept his mouth shut and worked hard and tried to fit in this year has been a sacrifice that should not go unnoticed. He's been a good team guy. Unfortunately, it has not transferred over to fulfilling this reduced role in a way that would make it great, perfect all the way around. And he always has argued, and I don't know if it's true or not, it's a great argument to make, is that the longer he plays, the better he gets. I bet you a lot of players would like to say that. But I do think that there are times when he gets into a rhythm on the court. And a couple of times this year, I have noticed that it's just his time to come off when he is not finished completing that hot rhythm. And that's a bitter pill for somebody like Malik Beasley to swallow. So hats off to him for, you know, swallowing that bile every now and then and being a team guy.
Yeah, I think we would have liked to have seen him bring a little bit more in these games with Edwards out. Yeah. With him in the starting lineup. And, you know, he did make 6 of his 12 threes last night. Like,
oh, he's trying. He's definitely chucking them up. And, you know,
half of them went in. I mean, yeah. I'm with you. They do feel a little
forced. With Malik Beasley, you know, does it translate to winning?
Right. No, that is the question. Do you have anything else we need to hit on here before we go?
No. I think that we wish our listeners, well, you'll be talking to the listeners before Christmas is over, you know?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, maybe you'll be lying half dead in a bed. And what I will say is that, you know, I am not a religious person. My Christmas experience growing up was totally commercial. My parents loved lording presents onto us, and so therefore I've done the same for my child, and we like the holidays because we have our traditions. They're not necessarily religious traditions, they're definitely more commercial traditions, but it's a kind time of year I really do enjoy. And I hope, however you take your holidays, whether it's Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Christmas, and whether it's commercially or in the way it was originally meant to be, that you have that kind of a holiday that is satisfying you as we go through yet another round of this bullshit pandemic.
Right. No, and I think too, and maybe this is more of a Thanksgiving thing of the thankfulness, but I'm having a lot of fun this year. Covering this team, doing this show with you, by myself, with others. And as always, it's you put it once that like the people listening to this are our Wolves tribe. And I agree with that. And it's just it's cool to, you know, share in this team with you and with everyone else. That is like, I think we've moved out of the wilderness of right, just Wolves sad randomness. And for me, I've had so much fun this year talking about basketball, and I'd say that pretty much every episode with you, but it's really interesting to me to think about, you know, what how Cat is being guarded this year, or how the thing we were talking about with D'Lo and those sort of things. And they're not even meant to be rips on the players. It's meant to be like, man, this is what normal teams do, right? Normal teams fighting for the playoffs.
they, over the course of the year, find ways to become more effective, right? And teams try and counter of ways to make them less effective. And the chess of Wolves basketball games this year have been really interesting, and it's made it so I don't even really want to get into the, there's a bunch of the questions that we got today that were about Miles Turner and trades and all this.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Right.
And the time will come for that. But I think you and I both are having fun just watching this team play every night and covering them.
And it's easier, you said more interesting. It's because we have definable things that we know are trying to be accomplished. Sometimes we're, you know, I mean, in previous seasons, we're scratching our heads. What are they up to here? You know, why are we, you know, mm-hmm. what is the hidden agenda? You know, right. Why is Trevion Graham shooting, you know, 4 threes a game? Or, you know, why are
ambiguous injuries, all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. You know, exactly. And is Ed Davis going to get 20 minutes tonight or two? And in the grand scheme of things, it didn't make a goddamn bit of difference whether Ed Davis got 20 or two, because he wasn't going to be here in a year or two, you know? And so you're doing these, you know, kabuki theater scenarios of, you know, oh, you know, this may happen. No, probably not. It probably will not happen, you know? Right. Whether Ed Davis plays well, you know, on February 17th is not really a thing that we want to talk about.
Right. No. These questions about D'Lo, about Cat, about Ant are important because they are the core of this team and likely will be in the coming years. And that's why it makes it interesting game to game what they are doing well and what they are not doing well. It's all relevant, and it's a good feeling to come into watching every one of these games, getting to Target Center, going to another game, whatever, where you're like, oh, the Wolves want to win this game. You know,
right, exactly.
Chris, we do our pregame interview with Chris Finch, and it's not about, oh, who's going to get some run tonight? It's about who's going to play so we can win tonight. And that I would imagine as a fan makes tuning in to watch Timberwolves games, you know, a lot more of an appointment in, you know, in their schedules, because it's actual basketball. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun with that. So from me and Britt, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to all of you. We'll be back sometime next week talking again after a few more games, the Christmas games. I just saw Luca just tested positive for COVID. So, you know, who knows what's going to go on with this league, but we'll keep talking about it. Hopefully I'll be back sitting next to you at a game, maybe not right behind the bikes in the near future, but I look forward to the rest of the year.
Sounds good.
All right, he's Britt. I'm Dane. Britt Robson on Twitter, Dane Moore MBA on Twitter. Britt will have a column for you at MinPost on, what will that be, Thursday afternoon. Give that a read. And again, happy holidays. We'll talk to you soon. Until then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man. I hope it never stops, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah, yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.